This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What kind of San Antonio do you want now and in the future? Good things just don't happen by themselves, accidentally, and major positive change doesn't stick around without thoughtful planning, focused determination, and dramatic action. That's true for building a great city and for having a fulfilling life of success. And that's what SA 2020 is all about. It's a people-powered nonprofit that works to keep the city on a path of job growth, higher education achievement, environmental sustainability, healthier communities, economic competitiveness, all sorts of good things. But how are we doing? SA 2020 recently released a report looking at these key benchmarks, and we're going to get a report card today. We're joined by Molly Cox, the president and CEO of SA 2020, and Laura McInerney. She is the director of community information for CNOW, which they're doing the data analysis. And welcome to The Source, both of y'all. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
And our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment about the process, about what, if you were part of it in the very beginning, we'd love to hear what your comments were when you joined that big session and where you want the city to go now, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And you can email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. And so Molly Cox, tell me overall, what is the big picture with SA 2020?
The big picture. Well, I think that's the cool part about SA 2020 is it is a big picture. Like, let's start there. When SA 2020 got started, the idea was, let's see where we can go in a positive trajectory for the next decade. And what we see today happening is people actually not just sitting back and going, like, remember that time that we envisioned this fantastic, you know, city for ourselves?
Yeah, that was cool.
That was so fun. And it's so nice to know that we were all thinking of this great thing. People are trying to do the hard work. Like, it wasn't just, let's envision this. Let's make this thing happen. So big picture wise, there are obviously issues, right? We've got some things that we'll talk about, which is why I brought along our best partner, Laura, because she's our data person. She hearts data. but I brought her so that we can move sort of obviously into the data itself. But then secondarily to that is we're also seeing some fantastic progress, right? Of the 59 community indicators that we currently report on, about 41% of them are either on track to be met by the year 2020 or have already met or exceeded its goal. So that says to me that we're seeing some pretty great progress in other areas. But the thing about SA 2020 is not just celebrating the successes of where we're going as a community. It's also highlighting the challenges and asking people to get involved, whether that be to coordinate services or to volunteer or to make sure that their organization is talking to other organizations also affecting change in those areas. It's a true coordinated effort to make our city better.
All right, so let's dig in a little bit at the with the numbers. You say that of the 59 indicators, mm-hmm. 41% are being tracked for either meeting them or exceeding them already. That's pretty good.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Yeah. So where you're starting to see some like major, like where we need to see some concerted effort and focus is going to be in areas that I don't believe that you would be shocked for me to say. In transportation, we're having some issues. as a city that is growing exponentially, we're having some difficulty moving the needle on transportation, whether that be VMT or your commute times or your use of public transit. And then we're also having some challenges in educational outcomes. And these are complex, difficult issues that are going to take some time.
And we're having challenges in public safety. We've seen a big jump in the homicide rate in the last year. Mm-hmm. And so you got to wonder, like, what's behind that? We're not getting a lot of answers from our leaders just or public officials in that area just yet. But, I mean, that should be an area of major concern.
Agreed.
And we won't see that in the data till next year or the year after. There's always a lag.
So talk to me about, okay, so transportation. You brought up transportation, mm-hmm. Molly. Alar, what do you look at when you want to see how are we doing on transportation?
Well, we track vehicle miles traveled. We track commute times.
This is all what public available
use,
data, right?
Boardings. Well, a lot of it is actually not publicly available, and that's one of the services that SA 2020 provides with its partners, is data that wouldn't ordinarily be published. The partners pull that data for us, like VIA, And give it to us so that we can analyze it and then give it to SA 2020 to interpret, to publish, to bring people together around. Some of it is public, like commute time out of Census American Community Survey or the DOT or something like that.
Okay, that's interesting to me because a lot of people hoard their data.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so having an agency that is out there like SA 2020, local nonprofit, going out there and pulling those numbers out of the tight-fisted hands of people around San Antonio, that's in itself an achievement.
It is a big deal. And that's the entire reason, actually, that the organization that I direct exists, Community Information Now, or CNOW, is what we call a local data intermediary. And the idea is that the data is kind of locked away, either intentionally or unintentionally, because people are busy doing their jobs. And so we can kind of get it out there into the public sphere. What we can't do within our wheelhouse is get people to do anything about it. So having partners like SA 2020 is critical. And if we're going to translate, you know, just putting the data out there is one thing, and that's a big thing. But turning that into action that's actually going to change the data is another huge thing.
Data, is going to become more and more important, particularly in these coming years, as people are talking about, is America getting greater? Or I don't know. Let's look at the numbers. And who has the numbers and who has an opportunity to mess with the numbers is real important. So we need nonpartisan, objective, non-biased agencies who are able to deliver that information locally as well as nationally. Mm-hmm. But let's dig in, like, since we're talking about transportation, where do you have here? Where are we coming up here on your report card?
Well, so we're not doing so well, obviously. Increasing complete streets, we're seeing some progress, but not at the rate we need to get to the goal we set for ourselves for the year 2020. Increasing public transit use has actually gone backwards, I believe. And then vehicle miles traveled and commute times are remaining relatively flat. They're not moving.
Mm-hmm. And one of the issues there is that sometimes issues compete with each other a little bit. I mean, everything obviously affects everything else. Everything
right.
is a system.
Yeah, when everything's nothing's a priority.
Well, that, but also it's like a huge game of whack-a-mole that if you hit this mole, it's going to pop up somewhere else.
Right.
And we know that with our booming economy, our economy is doing really well compared to a lot of other large urban areas in the country. So as we do better and there are more jobs and more people and more sprawl, it's hard to bring that commute time down to any degree. Keeping it flat is actually probably a success.
Right. But the goal for SA 2020, San Antonio's transportation system is recognized as a model of efficiency and environmental sustainability.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You've got 3 years to get there. I mean, that is going to be tough to
You are right. I think so. Part of the thing to look at when you're looking at a community report card, number one, is when is the data and how far back does it go? So the most recent report coming out has data that goes and it's the most recent and most updated from 2014 to 2016, right? So the data that you're looking at in transportation ranges from 2014 to 2015. That is the most recent and updated. But I think secondarily to your conversation is like, are we going to make that type of stuff? I think that's where things like the comprehensive plan and VIA's 2040 vision start to have a very significant impact over the course of the next couple of years.
And I think we're seeing the, no pun intended here, but the price of gridlock on our traffic situation and try and make decisions here locally. We're going to take a quick break and our phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from the community about what you think about SA 2020 and the community report card that was released this month. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 210-614-8980. We'll be right back. Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about SA 2020. Remember, if you're as old as I am, you might remember Project 90. That was when they were planning the San Antonio for the 90s, and that was Henry Cisneros and his big thing. And then when Julian Castro was elected mayor, he said, let's do something like that. Let's do SA 2020. And then people got together. He was very determined to say, this is not me. This is about the people and what the people want. And then Julian went on to do other things, and he's no longer the mayor. But people were wondering, what does that spell for SA 2020? We're joined by Molly Cox. She's now the president and CEO of the nonprofit SA 2020. So no more Julian Castro in the corner office at City Hall, but still SA 2020 roars.
It's still going. And I think that speaks to when you have the public involved and you say, this is your vision. It is not a particular leader's vision. It is built from the ground up, not from the top down, what that looks like, right? So I think just recently we announced a $400,000 grant from the Kresge Foundation out of Michigan, who basically was watching us turn this, what should have been sort of a community indicators project in a book on a shelf somewhere, into a living, breathing organism that works with 145 nonprofit partners and thousands of people kind of involved in a way that they haven't been able to put their finger on in other communities that have these projects.
Kresge, they're a national foundation.
Yeah.
They look across the country, and they were particularly impressed with the community involvement at SA22. This is not just a bunch of pinheads in a room looking at numbers on a computer
screen. That's part of it.
Okay, but this is about, you know, people helping people locally.
Yeah, I've made that comment multiple times. We've gotten calls from Washington, D.C., from Washington State. We even had a professor from the University of Warwick call and say, look, when we look up community indicators projects across the United States, we see them. They're fantastic. It's a great way to be transparent and objective about where your community is going. But nowhere do we see as much investment and involvement as we do in San Antonio. And I think that speaks to, I love that you called us a people-powered nonprofit. We're a people-powered city, quite frankly.
Sure, look at groups like Each One Teach One.
Yeah.
Which is a very, probably the best adult literacy group here in San Antonio.
Agreed.
And it is a people-powered nonprofit as well.
100%. One of our partners, I'm like, yes to Carolyn.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
And they need more support and applause and a spotlight, and you provide that.
We try to, yeah. I mean, we have 145 nonprofit partners. We've asked each of them to connect their program outcomes to community outcomes, right? So that when you partner or when you give or volunteer your time with those nonprofits, you know you're ultimately affecting a bigger, greater community outcome. So that's been very important to us.
Okay, we're going to go to the phone lines here, 210-614-8980. Liz has called in, and Liz, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
All right.
I was just commenting on the transportation system. I would like to see maybe a train or a subway that connects all the different parts of the city. You know, San Antonio is pretty big. I think it'll be helpful for getting around instead of having to wait, for the bus to come. I've taken the bus before, and it's nice, but it just takes forever. You know, a train would be nice. Not only that, when you think about the DWIs that go on in this city, I think that'll be helpful too, you know.
Okay.
Along those roads,
Thank you for the call, Liz. Appreciate that. So, you know, San Antonio kind of stuck in park on this issue.
Yeah, I don't think I'm wrong in saying that San Antonio wasn't built for public transportation. We're a sprawling city.
Well, it was built for horses.
Right, well, yeah. And now we're built for trucks. You know, like, so I think what's interesting about sort of that comment, too, Liz is right. We're looking for ways to utilize public transportation in ways that we've never thought of before, right? Which is why I think VIA is looking through to 2040. We're supposed to see, what, 1 million more people come into our city by the year 2040. There's a comprehensive plan through the city with a multimodal transportation arm to that as well. And the idea that that's the kind of thing that we're looking at is people who are saying, what else can we be doing to make our city better, more efficient, more sustainable as a community at large? So those are the kinds of things, rather than these either-or conversations that we sometimes get stuck in, right? It's either we do public safety or we do rider choice, and then we get stuck in this, like, mired down thing, as opposed to saying, why aren't we saying yes and, right?
Yes. Okay. Okay. You wanted to add, Laura?
I was going
to
say, I think the magic word in Liz's question was connecting.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
You know, we have a city that is fairly geographically large, and it is one of the most economically segregated cities in the country. We're consistently at the top of that list, however you measure it. So this is one of the consistent themes.
Talk about what that means for a second.
Sure. It means that people who have a lot of money live among other people who have a lot of money, and people who don't have any money live among people who don't have any money.
And in other communities, other parts of the country, we see more of a diversity, economic diversity in communities.
Yes, economic diversity at the neighborhood level, mixed income neighborhoods, if not necessarily mixed income housing developments. San Antonio is not like that. So you can actually live your entire life on one side. That's another interesting thing about San Antonio is we have sides. We don't have neighborhoods.
Right.
You can live your life on one of the sides, the north side, and never have any idea what life is like for your neighbors on any of the other sides of town. And so long as we are separated like that, we're not going to be able to work together very well, and we're not going to be able to benefit from what, if I can get real squishy and kumbaya, from what diversity does bring, because diversity is actually pretty practical. So having public transportation system and other strategies that connect people to each other, connect people to jobs, connect people to amenities like healthy foods and grocery stores, connect people to each other.
Or to the medical center.
Yeah, or to schools.
To civic participation.
Universities.
Yeah. Yes.
Libraries.
Uh-huh, 100%.
Uh-huh. And that's really, going back to the big picture, that's the big picture that we're talking about here. You know, we have to have an indicator that gets very, very specific. And for us, the public transportation one is boardings. Mm-hmm. And that may not be the perfect one. But a point that I make a lot is that an indicator is not intended to capture everything that you need to be thinking about with an issue. It's intended to kind of be a North Star to get people together around. And then you've got to dig into what some of your options are and the pinhead part.
Yeah, the pinhead part. But I think the interesting piece, right, as we're talking about transportation is this interconnectivity of these indicators or these areas, right? If, without transportation, we're also talking about influencing education. If I can't get to school, I can't learn, right? If I'm not connected to my neighbors, I don't know what's happening around my area of town or in the other areas of town. So there's an interesting piece around how all of these sort of interplay together. So to Laura's point where it's like, if you're just looking at one indicator, you're taking a very small micro picture of a much larger picture that is, are we developing transportation policies? Are we working towards transportation that connects our community in a way that makes it possible?
Okay, another caller, Martin is on the line. And hey, Martin, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you, David, and thank you for your show. You do a wonderful job.
I appreciate it.
Let me just say, to this point of transportation, you know, I knew someone 20 years ago. It was taking the bus, and it was taking them an hour and a half to get from Tobin Hill to Walsham.
Oh, wow.
And I still see that as the same problem that exists today. And maybe call me naive, but it seems as though we could use the existing highways or some type of thoroughfare to create a light rail system. I mean, you look at other cities, large cities, progressive cities, Boston, New York. I mean, they have their problems with their rivers and their byways and their difficulties, you know, that they've had over the years, but we keep having this sort of naysaying conversation about why San Antonio shouldn't have light rail. I spoke to a former mayor at one point who told me that the car dealers, the big car dealers, fight against it. You know, there are all kinds of reasons why, you know, people say, well, there's not enough money for it, but if we keep putting off this problem, you know, the millions or the billions it'll take, you know, continue to grow. We have a million people coming in, and, you know, within the next 20 years, we have to solve this problem. I know people don't want to give up their cars in San Antonio, but, you know, honestly, if you could go from downtown, if you work downtown and you lived way out in Bernie, and you could go down 10, you know, some way through that transportation system to get to the medical center, USAA, UTSA, you know, if you can discuss it, I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right, Martin, thank you for calling in. So another caller. We keep hearing from the people who are opposed to expanding public transportation is that there's no support for that. But whenever the issue comes up here on the air, this is what people call it, and they say that. This is what they want.
I think, first of all, I would slow clap Martin. If we could slow clap him. It's true. It's like, why aren't we considering sort of other alternatives?
That's a good thing, right?
Yeah. We want to slow. You want slow claps.
Okay.
But I think, too, there's another conversation underlying this one, which is the difference between needing public transportation and wanting public transportation, right? And that's a very interesting conversation to have. Somebody who does not have the ability to get from one place to the other without public transportation should ultimately be the thing, like, that's the person we should be working towards. It should never take you an hour and a half to get to your job. It shouldn't. Like, it shouldn't take you that long to get to school. And yet the conversations that we're having, again, become these sort of either or pitted against, and it really can't work that way.
And again, I think the life that you live determines how you view an issue, obviously. And probably a lot of people who are thinking about public transportation and opposing some of the options that have been put forward have not been in a situation that we see with a lot of low-income moms who don't have a big network of support, that when one kid has to go to the ER, she has to pull all the kids from school mm-hmm. because there's 3 bus transfers to get to the ER, and she can't get back in time to pick them up. So there's all of a sudden, you know, a missed instructional opportunity, a greater chance of dropout if they're chronically absent, lost revenue for the school districts. Again, everything is a system.
All right, let me get another caller in on this. Xavier, you're on the air. Hey, Xavier. Welcome to The Source.
Yes, David, thank you for your excellent show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
A lot of these problems stem from not having enough money. The tax money has been wasted. We lost over $500 million on a rigged bid for the Hemisphere Convention Center. Wasted money. We are now losing another $500 million on the Hemisphere Park. These private developers are building 500 apartments in our Hemisphere Park. Nobody asked me. I don't know if anybody asked you if they could build hotels in our parks.
Okay.
They are wasting our money. Maybe take that $1 billion and use it for something that we need to solve our problems. And this taking our money and wasting it, it's taxation without representation.
All right, Xavier, I got your point. Thank you for calling in. And let me get a quick reaction. So you have people who come to these conversations. They all bring lots of stuff with them. Xavier obviously is on top of this one particular issue. Of course, we got through the legislature. It was carried by Mike Villarreal and Leticia Vandepoot, a waiver that was able to, we didn't have to have a public vote on putting private enterprise on that public park. So that happened, and those guys are no longer in office.
I want to sort of bring it back to a point, this idea of like asking people, because we've been talking about transportation, and I think there's this incredible, interesting space around wanting a transportation system recognized as a model of efficiency and environmental sustainability, this idea around need versus want of public transportation. But, you know, nearly 6,000 people participated, right, in the SA 2020 visioning process. And I'm bringing it back to that from a space of, I think we all have a lens by which we see the city, whether that be where we live or how we work or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. What is interesting to me about how SA 2020 has continued is that we literally have got these 59 indicators or these sweeping vision statements in 11 different areas that we sort of sit in the center of a table and say, this is where we're going. Do you agree, for example, that we want to increase public transit use? And everybody around the table says, yeah, we should increase public transit use. We're not exactly sure how that's going to look, and I have a different idea than you have. But can we all agree to work towards this common goal and then get there somehow? And right. I think that's how we've started to see progress, quite frankly, in many of the areas.
Okay. All right. So we're going to take a 2-minute break. We're going to come right back. Our phone lines are open if you want to join the conversation. A lot of other data points to explore as we talk about economic competitiveness and health issues here in San Antonio. How are we measuring the improvements of health? We want to talk about that. And poverty, a big issue that we need to talk about in San Antonio, and higher education achievement. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. A big conversation about San Antonio's big issues here on The Source. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. You may have heard of SA 2020, but then you're not really sure what it is that they do. Well, what they do is they help plan San Antonio's future by talking to people, getting people together and saying, what do you want out of your city? How are we going to get there? And how are we going to measure the progress and try and come up with solutions and examine public policy. Is this working in the best interest of the people of San Antonio? It's an organization that's been lauded, and they've recently won a big grant for a recognition of their hard work, and are going forward into 2020. That is the goal line. What happens at 2020 and you reach all these goals, Molly Cox?
I take a nap.
You take a nap.
That's it. It's over. I just take a nap.
Okay.
No. In fact, it's funny that you asked that. The Area Foundation recently gave us a grant to work on a strategic plan. What happens, basically, to say what happens after 2020. So we're in the process of doing that. And sometime this year, we'll say, hey, it's going. We're still working. We just started working with the SA Tomorrow Comprehensive Plan through the City of San Antonio. They've got goals through the year 2040. We'll actually be putting their indicators on our website so that you can also track the city's progress towards a comprehensive plan. So that's cool.
Right. And so just real quickly, I know that VIA has a long vision as well. Mm-hmm. And they have a rail on their plan. We just don't know how they're going to do it. And that's the goal. That's the wish list. But, the difference is what you have here. Is it a wish list, or is this really, are these attainable goals that can actually see, concrete results in people's lives? You know, we're looking at some of these things. And the poverty indicators, I think, when we look at issues, we say we want to improve San Antonio's quality of life. To me, it seemed like the best way to do that is look for the people who are suffering the most downtrodden, and figure out how to improve their lives, because that's where you're going to see the biggest improvements. And you'll see data results right there. I mean, Laura, is that right?
Well, yes and no. We'll definitely see a lot of indicators move. Overall, if we can get the people who are doing the worst doing better, right? Raise the floor, essentially. I do think that our fates are all intertwined, and that it's important that we be able to break out the data by neighborhood and by race, ethnicity, by age group, by sex, so that we can actually see how everyone's doing, because we want everyone to do well, one city.
Okay, and to that, let's get a caller on the air, 210-614-8980, and Garrett is on the line. Garrett, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Thanks for the show, and thanks to SA2020 for all the great work you do. I have a question about homelessness indicators, mm-hmm. and want to invite some discussion about it. Basically, the idea that it seems that homelessness is being tracked in terms of the number of people who are sheltered, and I just want to invite conversation about whether the goal or conversation should be reframed in terms of the number of people who get permanently housed or the number of people who come close to becoming homeless but through city and partner programs can avoid becoming homeless. And I'll take your response off here. Thanks.
Okay, so first of all, is that true that, I mean, don't we do like a homeless count? There's a national homeless count.
Mm-hmm. The actual measures, three-year average number of sheltered and unsheltered homeless persons through that point in time count. Different organizations, different sectors use different definitions of homelessness. And one thing that we know that we're not capturing here that's a huge issue is people who are not permanently housed but aren't out somewhere where they could be counted in a point in time count. So people who are couch surfing with friends and relatives, or just kind of here and there, but not living in a car on the street or in a shelter. So that's a huge issue that we know that we're not capturing. It's a tough one to capture, obviously, in terms of the data. And the indicator that we've got is going down. But again, like we said earlier, there's not any one single number that's going to tell that whole story.
Well, and I think also looking at that number specifically, you also need to look at the collaborative efforts that are happening with like the South Alamo Regional Alliance for the Homeless or Haven for Hope. SAHA has many programs that are doing that. We just had a veteran homelessness from the city of San Antonio effectively go down quite substantially. So I think there's also who all is working on it, and how are they, what works are they doing? How are their program indicators moving as well? And are those affecting the ultimate outcome?
Okay. Another caller, Mayer. And Mayer, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm very interested in the mass transportation, because when I travel, I see that most other countries have a way better handle on it than we do. And I think one of the big reasons is that we overemphasize the usefulness of mass transportation for the lower classes or the working classes or the poor people. I think I see in Europe that everyone rides the train, not just a few, you know, not just the poor people. I've ridden on the train with the people that have high government positions. It's, you know, we've stigmatized riding mass transit, and that's why politicians don't place much emphasis on it.
So she's talking about getting to riders of necessity, as mm-hmm. you spoke about people who don't have a car or they don't have a driver's license for whatever reason, mm-hmm. they can't get one, and so they're dependent on public transportation. But when you get to other communities, even Dallas now, and I've certainly in Washington and New York and all these other places, you can people of all sorts of stripes, you ride public transportation to get around because it's cheaper, it's easier, it's just life.
Yeah, agreed. And I think if you, in several conversations that we've had, what you're seeing is like this influx of college educated young, like this boomerang effect where they're leaving, going to college, coming back, right, to San Antonio. And they're also witnessing what it's like to have mass transit. Once they leave, they see, hey, it's easy for me to get around using a train in Washington, or I've been able to use public transportation. And then I come back and it's not available as well as it is in other cities. So you start to have this, like, again, conversation around need versus want. And can we somehow marry those two? Like, that should be the same.
Right. People shouldn't come back to San Antonio and No, that's not the way it should be. It should be, you know, and we could seed ideas like with SA 2020 to bring about that change.
Mm-hmm.
And another caller, Mark. And Mark, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. As far as transportation goes, I come from a large East Coast city, and we had, you know, public transportation, buses, elevated subways, trolleys, trackless trolleys, mm-hmm. all kinds of things. And they were always being used by, like the lady said, all aspects of society. Here, they keep getting bigger and bigger buses, the tandem buses. And even during rush hour, I only see about 5 to 7 people on a bus. And, you know, VIA talks about the ridership, the numbers on the ridership.
So Mark, you ride the Primo?
Yeah, the Primo. I don't see a lot of people on.
So when you're on the Primo, you're saying?
I don't take public transportation.
Okay, so let me tell you what I do. And when I take the Primo at rush hour, it's crowded. It's full.
It's, what do you consider crowded? I mean,
no seats.
We used to have standing room only, all day and all night. And you could stop the bus at one, you know, and transfer it to another bus. It would be right there and would take you where you wanted. Yes, I drove in the big city, but I would take public transportation most of the time because it was convenient and efficient. Here, it's not efficient at all, and it tears up the streets. Those bigger buses, even not even counting the Primo, but the bigger buses.
Okay.
And the park and ride, I don't see a lot of usage doing all that, and they keep getting bigger and bigger buses.
Bigger buses, the problem. You want smaller buses. You think that's the solution. All right, well, thank you for that. Well, let me move on to talking about the poverty issue. So how are we doing tracking poverty here locally?
Well, actually, we've seen a slight decrease in poverty for the first time in many years. It's not something that we normally see, and it's something that I didn't really believe when I first saw it. I do believe in data. I believe in trying to poke a hole in it first before you walk around talking about it. But obviously, we see a tremendous difference in the poverty rate depending on who you are.
Is that like a 1 year? Because I know last year we saw nationally the biggest single drop in the poverty rate since they've been keeping track of it. But it was it took a long time to get there. During the Obama years, mm-hmm. we continued to see increases.
The way that we measure this information is through American Community Survey from the Census, which is a sample. And any time that you have a survey or a sample, you're going to have a margin of error. So that's one important thing to say first. Just like when we get poll results before an election, people say plus or minus 3 percentage points, right? So if your poverty line, if your poverty number goes down 2 percentage points, but your margin of error was 3 percentage points, you can't actually say that was a change because it hasn't gone past that margin of error cutoff point. So some of the time that the estimate goes down, we can't actually say that was a real drop. We have seen a real drop this year, I think, and especially in some groups. When I started picking apart the data to see whether it was real, one of the things that I looked at was people who had moved within the last year from another house in the same in our county. And we expect that people who are stationary are probably going to be doing pretty well. These are the homeowners. They're settled and doing well. But that moved within the same county population is going to include our highly mobile, lower-income population that is moving from place to place without a stable, permanent housing
situation.
And that
seems to be happening more frequently.
I don't know about more frequently. It's a long-standing problem, and service providers and schools trying to just find the family.
And on the south side of San Antonio, a lot of micro school districts there, and people are moving from school district to school district.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that is a complication to life.
Mm-hmm. It sure is. But we do see the poverty rate go down, just to close that loop, within that group, which is everybody's poverty rate pretty much went up during the recession. So in some cases, we're only seeing a recovery back to square one.
Okay. All right. We're going to take another break. Phone lines are open. If you got a question or comment as we talk about SA 2020, San Antonio's future, our goals, and where we are right now in trying to reach the goals, trying to make San Antonio a more prosperous, economically successful, environmentally sustainable, healthier, public safety-er city. Yeah, give us a call, 210-614-8980. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In 2010, a bunch of people in San Antonio got together in a room. They sat around a bunch of round tables, and they all worked on pieces of paper and said, where do they want San Antonio to be in 10 years? They came up with SA 2020, and it wasn't just a bunch of feel-good. I want to have a lot more flowers, and I want to have, well, that's good. But they also wanted to have really concrete goals that could be achieved, and we could measure our success as we got there. And that's what SA 2020 has been doing along these years as we go into the home stretch. It's only 3 years away. And so where are we on this journey, and how are we doing? We're talking with Molly Cox, the president and CEO of the local nonprofit, a people-powered nonprofit, SA 2020. And also with us is Laura McKinnon. She is the director of community information for CI Now, and she does the numbers for them. They said out of 59 of their goals, 41% of them are on track or have exceeded their goals for the 2020. So that's great news, but still a lot of work to be done. Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment, the number is 210-614-8980. I still want to dig into the poverty issue, you know, because I think that's really the bottom line. How, you know, we want to try and break out of the cycle of poverty that we have in San Antonio, and we're looking, and one is education. Mm-hmm. And what are we looking at with education statistics?
Our graduation rates were almost, within the first 2 years of putting out that we wanted to increase graduation rates, were almost immediate. And we would say that that comes from an institution sort of wrapping their hands around, hey, we can affect, right, graduation rates. It's the same thing for when the San Antonio Police Department's emergency response times went down. An institution sort of owns that and can fix it. The issue, however, is in attainment, professional certifications, readiness, right? There's some space around. Those are complex issues that aren't just like, hey, go to college and all the magic is fixed.
Oh, yeah.
I know, right? So there's some interrelatedness when we talk about poverty, and we talk about just community change generally, which is cyclical, quite frankly, right? If you're starting in poverty, what happens with early childhood indicators or college readiness, civic engagement, et cetera? And at any point within that community cycle, if you intervene and come in there, then you can ultimately change the cycle. So you have things like, for example, San Antonio Works or SA Works, which is this fantastic program that allows middle school, high school students to do paid internships within corporations in San Antonio to sort of prepare them for work outside of school. You have things like the Cafe College or San Antonio Education Partnership working to increase college attainment. So there are spaces around sort of these interventions that are happening.
But we've been hearing for a long time that third grade reading levels are not where they need to be, mm-hmm. even after we've put in with the pre-K for SA. You know, what's up with that?
Well, I will say this is a really tough one to trend because in the past few years we've seen changes in the test itself and we've seen changes in the score that's required to be considered passing. There's been plenty of media coverage of the issues there. I don't need to go into that. But it's one of the ones that we're not very certain about how well our indicator measures reality.
And I'll say this to you too, David. There's a piece around, I guess, Essay 2020's role, right, is to say, okay, third grade literacy is not moving. And we know organizations like Essay Reads or San Antonio Youth Literacy do have programming directly related to third grade literacy. So if that's something that you feel strongly about, then you should be putting your time, your energy, your talent, your money in those organizations to help them get better outcomes and show how their 1.3 grade level increase in San Antonio youth literacy ultimately could impact a much greater population if they had more people.
And there's a logic model too here. Pre-K for SA took a while to ramp up, right? An intervention of that size. And then those kids have to get from that age to age 8. So right. I don't think we would have seen pre-K for SA in third grade reading yet by any means.
Right.
I do think we're starting to see some returns in kinder readiness.
And pre-K for SA is not a citywide program. It is still just servicing the few people who can get into the programs.
Right. And any time you're trying to change an indicator for an entire population, you've got to have a really massive intervention in place to move that number very much year to year.
Looking at the health indicators, you know, we know diabetes is a significant problem here in San Antonio. It's impacting families, people who have amputations, lose their eyesight, they can't work. We know that diet and exercise, obesity, all these things are connected towards that. But it can be a manageable, you know, condition if people are alerted to the fact that they are, I hate the term pre-diabetic, you know, because I think if you're pre-diabetic, you're diabetic. But, you know, you're on track to becoming that, and you need to deal with that. You know, are people getting the information that they need in order to cope with that?
Well, let's start then. If we're going to talk diabetes, let's also talk about access to healthcare, right? Because that's where it all begins, is if you have access to healthcare, if you are getting at least an annual physical, perhaps you do get the information that you need prior to those things coming out. Now, as far as the indicators are concerned, we're seeing increases in access to healthcare. We're seeing decreases in diabetes rates. But I'm going to punt to Laura because this is like her wheelhouse. I use the word wheelhouse.
Right. So access to healthcare, we're talking about the Affordable Care Act.
Yes, we are. And we have seen increases in the percent of the population that's covered with insurance. Again, this is, I think, an example of what happens when you have real intentional, targeted, coordinated local effort. If you throw the kitchen sink at an issue, which Enroll SA did, the minute that they got an opportunity to enroll someone in something, we started to see an improvement in that indicator. And I don't know that that won't reverse course at the moment.
Right.
I will say, as far as diabetes, that, you know, access to things and information about things is just the necessary but not sufficient first step. We all know that changing our habits and our patterns is really tough, especially if the tide's going against you and everyone around you. So again, I think that's going to be one that it's going to take us a long time to see some change.
So the Affordable Care Act allowed people to get checkups, free checkups, and then also have access to a doctor and maybe get the medication or at least the doctor's involvement. And we saw reductions locally in diabetes. We don't know if one's connected to the other, but it's there.
Right, it is. We also saw a decrease in premature death. And again, you know, we can't say that this caused that, but they certainly are part of the if-then chain.
Okay, all right, so the number of the caller, the number is 210-614-8980 as we talk about the SA 2020, and Renee is on the line. Renee, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. This question touches on educational opportunity and attainment and also poverty and access to equal opportunity, and that is, what's going on with the state of our young adults and children with disabilities in our city?
Okay, Renee, thank you for the call. So dealing with youth disabilities, that's an area that, I don't know, did that fall under the umbrella of SA 2020? Did y'all look at that?
So we don't have an indicator that tracks youth with disabilities, right? Or what is interesting about that, and we've had this conversation multiple times. So Any Baby Can is a fantastic partner of ours. And of course, anytime that you look at educational opportunity or you look at economic prosperity, if you're not looking at all populations, that's problematic. And I think in the case of educational opportunity and economic prosperity, populations are important. And, you know, Laura was mentioning that earlier with poverty. It's like you can't just look at poverty overarchingly. We start to dig into the data of what's happening in neighborhoods, what's happening among genders, what's happening among race, ethnicity. So I think that's to that point.
And to that point, also economic competitiveness. Mm-hmm. San Antonio has to be a job generator in order to do something about poverty. Where were we with that?
Well, we have to be a job generator, but we also have to be doing something for our own, what I call homegrown residents. Yeah. If we create great jobs and import people from elsewhere in the country, that's great for our economy, but it didn't do anything for the folks who were born here. So trying to create some good jobs, good wage jobs that we can train our own residents into in the short term and not be waiting a generation to see that.
And we've seen, David, in our community, this major space around middle skills jobs. We have a major problem there, right? Something that needs more than a high school education, but less than a college education. So something with a professional certification, et cetera. And we're seeing that gap is a problem. Like, we're producing one person for every 10 IT jobs, one person for every healthcare bioscience job, and they're existing. So it goes back to what I said earlier, this either or, and Laura hit it perfectly. Are we then recruiting people from out of town to fill those jobs, or are we helping people who live here already, our homegrown workforce? And we believe at SA 2020, and that's what our partners believe too, is that conversation can be yes, and we can recruit and we can build up our homegrown workforce.
So I'm looking at the report card here for economic competitiveness, seeing increased per capita income, that's on the increase, increased employment in target industries that has been achieved, I guess, that you say here, mm-hmm. Increased entrepreneurship, that is also on the way up, but we're seeing a red flag here for increased professional certificates, even though we've got great organizations in San Antonio like Code Up and other outfits, and community colleges are all on trying to make this go forward.
Yes, and you'll see for the first time probably in our city's history, industry, higher ed, districts, community-based organizations all working together on this problem. I think this indicator, the data indicators from 2014, 2015, which means there's work that's currently happening that we don't yet have the answer to.
And so we see that this is an multi-layered, interlocking issues, one dependent upon each other, and as everyone in San Antonio is dependent upon each other to mm-hmm. find these solutions. I want to thank Molly Cox, President and CEO of SA 2020, and Laura McInerney. She is the Director of Community Information for CNOW, and this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.